We continue now our series of homilies on the theology of the body, reflecting on the first of the three words of Christ, which make up this new language, which we will discover is really the oldest language. The greatest movie of all time is undoubtedly Star Trek II: The Wrath of Khan. One of my favorite scenes is when Admiral Kirk outsmarts his old adversary Khan in the Mutara Nebula. Even if you are not a science fiction fan, try to imagine this cloudy nebula in outer space where a starship's advanced navigation systems are rendered useless. It is equivalent to driving in thick, dense fog. Each captain, therefore, must rely on his own intuition and instinct. At one point, Spock informs Kirk, "Khan is intelligent, but not experienced. His pattern indicates two-dimensional thinking." That is, Khan is an unequaled tactician and can outmaneuver anyone on the horizontal plane. When everything is on the same level, two-dimensional, he has eyes in the back of his head. But he is vulnerable when you add the vertical or the third dimension. Kirk, however, can think vertically and horizontally and outsmarts Khan. How does he do it? First, he drops the starship Enterprise below the level at which Khan's ship, Reliant, is flying. He is thus entirely out of Khan's field of vision. Then Kirk moves in behind him, coming back up to the same level, fires his photon torpedoes, and destroys him. In other words, by thinking three-dimensionally, vertically, and horizontally, Kirk can survey the battlefield better than Khan, who can only think two-dimensionally. I mention this scene because this three-dimensional thinking is another way to describe Pope St. John Paul II's theology of the body. What do I mean? Well, how do most people tend to think about marriage and sex? We think of human love exclusively in terms of earthly life, which is only two-dimensional. For example, we might think, "When I was a teenager, I fell in love with my high school sweetheart. We got married after college. We had children, and now we have grandchildren. And when we die, the story ends." While this version of human love is true, it only scratches the surface and stays on the horizontal level, exclusively earthly thinking. In other words, like Khan, we are missing an entire dimension of the reality of human love, namely the vertical, both lower and higher than earthly thinking. What I would suggest to you is that in the lower level, we learn the first word of Christ. And in the higher level, we will learn to speak the third word of Christ. You see, meditating on the first word of Christ in Matthew chapter 19, verse 8, John Paul goes below, or more precisely, deeper into the reality of love, marriage, and sex by examining Genesis chapters 1 and 2. In the first two chapters of Genesis, in other words, the Pope discovers deep truths about who human beings are, how we should love one another, and what the Creator originally intended marriage to be. The Pope's analysis of Genesis reveals the uncharted depths of human love. But then jumping ahead to Jesus' third word in Matthew 22, verse 30, where Jesus gives a glimpse of heavenly life, teaching, "For in the resurrection they neither marry nor are given in marriage, but are like the angels in heaven." John Paul also wants to sort of fly above the ordinary earthly level of human love and marriage. That is, whatever else heaven will be like, we will not be married to our spouses like we are here on earth. Now, many newly married couples will think, "Oh, that's so sad." But older married couples will think, "Whew, thank you, Jesus." Not a few older couples live like the cartoon strip, The Lockhorns. In other words, these lower and higher dimensions of love and marriage help us to understand Jesus' first and third words respectively. And then once we have become fluent in the language of the theology of the body, on these two vertical dimensions, speaking Jesus' first and third words well, we will return to the horizontal level. That is Jesus' second word in Matthew 5, verse 28, and see earthly life in an entirely new light. That is, we will perceive how earthly marriage is a pilgrimage that originated in Eden and will culminate in eternity. I will just point out three profound insights the Pope offers us about human love and married life from Genesis 1 and 2. Think about each following insight like a syllable. That is, as only one part of the first word of Christ. The Holy Father marveled at the richness of Christ's words, stating, "We were able to realize how vast was the context of a sentence, or even just a word spoken by Christ." That is, each word spoken by Jesus in the gospel is full of grace and truth, as it says in John's prologue. The first insight, or syllable, John Paul calls original solitude. Think of the card game solitaire, or being in solitary confinement if you're in prison. These are things we do alone. And Adam was originally created alone. The Pope explores the human experience of solitude. This is phenomenology. In Genesis chapter 2, verse 20, which reads, "The man gave names to all cattle and to all the birds of the air and to every beast of the field. But for the man, there was not found a helper fit for him." You know, when I first got my dog a year ago, I asked parishioners to help me name him. The most popular name people suggested was Bruno. But we don't talk about Bruno. No, no, no. We don't talk about Bruno. That was a song from a movie. John Paul explains, however, that Adam did not just name the animals, like I name my dog, and acknowledge that none of them were a suitable partner. The Pope surprisingly adds that it was precisely through his body that Adam figured out that he was different from the animals. Now that should shock us. Why? Well, usually people think that our bodies make us similar to the animals. But John Paul disagrees. Try to wrap your mind around this insight. This is the first syllable of Christ's first word. Because this is exactly the three-dimensional thinking of the theology of the body. Namely, our body makes us different from the animals. Let me share a lengthy quotation from the text of the Pope's theology of the body to give you a taste of how he writes. You know, John Paul's theology is meaty, and the 532 pages of his book are like that Amarillo, Texas 72-ounce steak that only a few can eat all at once. The Holy Father, reflecting on Genesis chapter 2, verses 19 and 20, explains, man, formed in this way, belongs to the visible world. He is a body among bodies. The body by which man shares in the visible created world makes him at the same time aware of being alone. Solitude. Otherwise, he would not have been able to arrive at this conviction, which in fact he reached, as we read in Genesis 2:20, if his body had not helped him to understand it, making the matter evident to him. Did you catch that innovative insight? The Pope is arguing that it is not just the soul that makes us different from the animals, and it certainly does, but the body does too. In fact, John Paul will dare to go even further and claim that the body makes us similar to God. He writes, therefore, what could arguably be the thesis statement of the whole theology of the body. Listen to this. The human body, in fact, and only the human body, is capable of making visible what is invisible, the spiritual and the divine. It has been created to transfer into the visible reality of the world the mystery hidden from eternity in God, and thus to be a sign of it. Now, I admit that this spiritual divine capability of the body may be hard to visualize when we look at our own bodies in the mirror, which often look like poor Mr. Magoo. Remember the cartoon character? Who was rather weak and frail, pot-bellied, gray-haired, blind, subject to death, and finally, disease. How could this body, which Hamlet described as the quintessence of dust, make us similar to God? Exactly the opposite seems self-evident. But even if we are blind, like Magoo, to that vision, that is precisely what Adam saw. The body was a sign of the divine. The Pope calls this insight original solitude, because Adam's body taught him he was alone and unlike the animals. You see, before original sin, Adam was capable of this sort of three-dimensional thinking. Or put differently, he spoke the theology of the body fluently, effortlessly. It is our sinful state after original sin that limits us to two-dimensional thinking and makes us stutter trying to pronounce this first syllable of the first word of Christ. Original sin darkens the intellect, and therefore causes us to think that our bodies make us like the animals. Let me leave you with a startling example. On April 25th, 2022, Newsweek reported the remarkable story of Deborah Hodge in London, who legally married her cat named India. Why couldn't she have named her cat Pakistan? In any case, her landlord threatened to evict her because he did not allow pets. So Deborah decided to marry her cat to prove that the cat was her spouse rather than her pet. Listen to Deborah's logic, and many people today would have no difficulty agreeing. I had nothing to lose, Deborah said, and everything to gain. And so I married my cat. I recited vows under the universe that no man will ever tear myself and India apart. Thinking you can marry your cat is an extreme example of two-dimensional thinking. On the other hand, when we grasp what John Paul means by original solitude, we can enunciate the verse, the first syllable of the first word of Christ.
Praised be Jesus Christ.